Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Salvi drills it to deep left field, and he gets it into the Crawford boxes. So it's his 33rd home run of the year, extending his career high. And for the first time in his big league career, Salvi has driven in more than 80. That's number 81, and the Royals lead 2-0 in the third. And Rivera hits it hard and up the middle and into center field. Hanser Alberto is around third, and he will beat the throw, which is cut off.
Teams are playing as tough no matter who you play. And these teams are as dangerous or even more dangerous than the contending teams because they have nothing to lose right now. You know, they're playing loose, and you can tell. They want to be down with the kids.
Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
All right. Yeah, you heard the intro. You saw it last night. It's just inexplicable. It just is. I don't get it. I just don't get it. But you knew. I mean, honestly, when Perez hit that homer, did their announcer sound like he wasn't very excited about that? It was just so ho-hum. Are you not excited about a home run by your team, by your guys on your team beating the Astros? Is that guy? That Royals announcer must just be like, well, this is just going to be, what's the difference if we win or lose? Doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. We suck. We're a terrible team. 56-68, which, you know, 12 games under 500 is not, it's terrible. But the Astros are making them look like the 85 Royals. Holy crap. What is going on with this baseball team that you can't beat? You can't come up with another 10 left on base last night.
It was pathetic. Taylor Jones, when you needed him most. I mean, there was actually Yuli, Taylor Jones. There's a variety of guys with opportunities to drive Jake Myers to get big hits when you really needed it. And then, of course, Yimi came in and just completely sucked. I mean, that guy.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with him.
What are we getting?
He's just awful.
He has been just not good.
No, he's been awful. And that was a guy that, you know, that's a guy that was pitching pretty damn well over there. He was their closer in Miami. Mm-hmm. And here he comes over here and just sucks. Maybe it's the pressure of actually being on a good team and having to perform for a good team. I don't know what it is.
We just needed him to just do his job, keep it in place so that there was actually an opportunity to step up and make something happen. And of course, the Astros' offense wasn't going to show up, but at least give them a chance. And instead, he let that game get out of control, and that was all she wrote. The Astros only scored one run. Once again, they had two big, but in back-to-back games now, the offense has been a little, it's not that it's as stagnant as it is that it hasn't been clutch. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't been clutch with men on base. And, you know, guys like in back-to-back games now, the bullpen has let you down a little bit. Greinke was okay. He was okay yesterday. He wasn't terrible. I mean, Salvador Perez is having a good season, and he bombed you out 2-0, and you were behind, and that was it. You were boat race from that point forward. You were never able to get back in the game after you were down. I mean, you got a run, 2-1, then you had an opportunity to tie it up or even take the lead. Who was that? Who was it that hit the shot that was just, I thought was going to be a Crawford box shot? Was that?
Yuli.
That was Yuli, wasn't
Yuli.
It?
Yuli, missed
yeah.
it. Yep. Well, he was 3-for-3, so, I mean, Yuli did his job. There's no question about it. It's good to see him hitting again because when he came back, he was struggling a little bit. But It's just inexplicable. And I think they're pressing more. It's so funny. Now they're pressing against the bad teams, you know, trying any way, shape, or form to get a win against these crappy teams, as opposed to the good. You would think in the big games against good teams, when you know, the whole world is watching and it means something, that they would be pressing then, and they seem as loose as they can be. And against these teams, it's just now. Greinke said he was complaining that we're complaining about this. So here's Greinke complaining that we're complaining.
It seems like every year I'm on a team and they find some small thing to complain about. Like this year, you guys think that that's a big deal. I think last year we might not have won home games or something like that, which was a big deal. And then things like that. I think in Arizona, it was something like not doing good enough at home one time, too. And I don't know, you can't win every game, and it just happens.
Yeah, no, you can't win every game, but you should be better. You shouldn't be 1-4 against the Royals.
Is there anybody that complains more about anyone
complaining
than baseball players?
No.
It's always, God, why do you guys, you know, you guys always talk about us losing. It's early in the year. These games we have, there's plenty of time. Don't worry about it. Or, what? So we're not winning at home. What, this is a big deal now?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's called home field advantage. And when you lose, when you lose in the playoffs and you finish on the road, it'll be a big deal because you're on the road or you didn't have home field advantage. You know, I guess because we can't beat bad teams. Yes, it affects your playoff seeding.
Yes.
Your home
field
advantage.
Yes, we're complaining about that. Yes, we're complaining.
Your home field advantage.
Yeah, we're complaining about that.
About you losing. Yes, we praise you. We praise you. Praise on top of praise for beating teams over 500.
How does Daniel Lynch go 5 innings, give up 6 hits and 3 walks?
Dude, Lynch had some pretty good stuff yesterday.
But only 1 earned run. How in the world is he 5 innings, got 9 runners and 1 run?
Well, I mean, go look down and to the left.
That's almost runners. It's almost 2 runners per inning, and you get 1 run.
Go look at that LOB, the number, the letters LOB. Yeah. See how that looks.
So,
was it game before, 13?
So in the last 2 games against the Astros, yeah, it was 13 left on base the day before. Daniel Lynch, 12 innings pitched, give up 10 hits, 2 earned runs, 6 walks, and 10 strikeouts. I mean, we're Daniel Lynch's biatch. Mm-hmm. I mean, goodness gracious, you guys, are you kidding me? And dude is really not that good. Other than that, I mean, well, he did have a 15.75 earned run average in May. He's just been not good. And we're just making him look like a superstar. The outing before against the Yankees, 4 2/3, 3 earned runs, 100 pitches, beat it. He gave up 4 walks too. Beat it, Daniel Lynch. How in the world is this team not scoring runs on this guy? How in the world is that happening? Now he does. It looks like he's going to be pretty good. He's got some good stuff. But come on, man, come up with a hit in a clutch situation against these teams. You should have swept Seattle, and I shouldn't say you should have won this game. You can't beat the Royals. I'm just saying, listen, now yesterday I wanted to go 4-2 against in these 6 games.
Yeah, where were you at
against
now?
The Royals and the Rangers? 3-3. I'm going to take 3-3.
You'll just take a 3-3 home
stand? I think
stand?
It'll be a successful 6 games. You go 3-3 against the Rangers and the Royals.
Let me check something, man. Where are we at in standings? I never check this anymore, ever.
What?
Because it's just, well, on the Astros standings, just because I never think about them being in any kind of trouble.
Well, they're 3.5 up on the A's lost again.
God, thank God the A's. Every time the Astros are winning, the A's are winning.
So
when
the
Astros losing, the A's are
the
losing.
Astros still have a game and a half lead on the White Sox for the second best record. You can almost forget about
that's
the Rays.
That's astonishing that the Astros are there.
You can almost forget about the Rays. The Yankees and the Astros have the same record now at 73-52. The Astros now are 4 full games behind the Rays for the best record in the American League. You can almost forget about that now. So you got to win the division. you have got to beat the A's. You got to make sure that you take care of that business. If you don't, now you want to stay ahead of the White Sox, so you've got home field advantage in that first round. The Rays are going to be playing either the Yankees or the Yankees, the A's, or the Red Sox. The Red Sox, right? Red Sox and Yankees right now are the wild card in the American League. 73-52, 71-55. The A's have fallen to 70-56, just 14 games over 500 the way that they've been playing. Have they been bad?
But, John, you still can't let up. I mean, you still have – there is still an outside shot that you could be in trouble playoff-wise.
Oh, no,
you
don't
win
your
division.
Oh, yeah.
You
got to win the division now.
Yeah, you need to win the division.
Well, you're still tied for the best record for a wild card.
Yeah, no, you could still.
But you have it.
The Yankees are in the mix now, and the Red Sox.
Right.
They have Chris Sale back
in the mix. The Yankees are the hottest team in baseball. So here's the deal, though. If you lose the division, that means you're losing games. That means that you're losing on the wild card as well. So yeah, there is a chance that you got that 3.5 game cushion, but it's only because the A's can't be playing poor. And, you know, losing Bassett was a big deal.
Oh, yeah, it was huge.
That was huge.
There's no way he's back.
I mean, you don't
right?
say anything because he got hit in the face.
Right.
So you're not like, well, this is going to hurt them, you know, baseball-wise. No, you don't say that, but you can now since, you know, we know that he's okay. He's got his face broken up. But he had, I think the surgery's gone down already, I'm pretty sure. But the A's have been just miserable. They won one against the White Sox. They won one out of four against the White Sox. And then they lost two out of three to the Giants. And then they lost to the Mariners last night as well. So they're just miserable right now. And that's okay. That's fun. That's fine by me.
So KJ makes a really good point about Zach Greinke. Remember Zach Greinke saying, 1 year, complaining about us not being able to win at home. Was it 2019? Is that when you got swept? Every game at home, and you lost the World Series because of it? Is that the time that you're talking about with the complaining about not being able to win at home?
Yeah.
When you lost the World Series, is that then? Or when was that people were complaining too much about losing at home?
Well, no, I think he was talking about during the regular season. But, man, Greinke was really fired up there. Sounded like roid rage to me. No, he's kind of soft-spoken a little bit. Bo Jiden says the Astros play poopy teams poopy. I think that's a pretty good assessment. I think that's a pretty damn good assessment, Bo Jiden. Mm-hmm. That sounds like it's different. Bo Jiden. I don't know.
Did you see what his at is? Fartolo Cologne? 77. This guy likes to mess with names.
I guess he does.
That's his thing.
He's Bo Jiden.
That's his gig. That's his jam. Fartolo Cologne. This guy is 100%. This guy was 100% a bra snapper as a kid. A wet willy. The guy put the finger in your ears, the wet finger in your ears, the worst.
Texans.
Wet willies are some of the worst things you can do to a human.
Or
it's not as bad.
Tisnitty twisters.
Oh,
those are the worst.
I mean, who does those things? They're not as bad as a wet willy's not as bad as like waterboarding someone. But it's
not even close. What are you talking about?
No, but it's up there, though. A wet willy? Somebody put their spit on a finger and put it in your ear?
Ugh.
You get the same reaction from you. Same reaction. Same reaction.
We'll hear from Field Yates. He was on the Wheelhouse yesterday. His thoughts on the Texans. We'll replay some of his bites. That's going to happen next right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. But first, what about TGS?
TGS Insurance, homeowners insurance. Now, I do want to let you know that they understand that some of these companies are giving you quote-unquote bundles when you shop with them for your home and your auto. So one of the things that like they did this for me is not only did they have a great deal for my homeowner's insurance because that would break up my bundle with the other one, they found a different car insurance for me and actually ended up saving me money. So TGS Insurance will work overtime to make sure that you are happy. And they try to find you competitive rates on A-rated insurance. And they make it really simple. They want to make this as easy on you as possible. Text the word money to 232323. Money to 232323. You are going to get a firm quote on homeowner's insurance within 15 seconds. And from there, if you'd like to switch, they make it super easy. It's like a DocuSign is sent to you. You know, they make the phone call to the other company in most cases, And or, you know, you can do it either way that you want to do it. I'm just telling you that you can get changed in the same day. And even if you've prepaid, you'll get your prorated amount back. TGSinsurance.com. Text the word money to 232323.
This is Jose Altuve, and you're listening to Jung and Lance on ESPN 97.5. Brought to you by Golf Course Chevrolet, Buick, and GMC.
The Kings are on the air. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, it's 7:16 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So our Houston Texans with the big win, bringing home the Governor's Cup the other night. Coach looked at it and was none too pleased. The one stat that we really didn't talk about was 0-for-10 on third downs. I know it's the preseason and it doesn't really matter, but converting on third downs is going to be kind of a big deal when you go 0-for-10. It's rare you win a football game if you don't convert.
Well, if you're not, but you don't have the luxury of not converting third downs on this team.
No,
unless you think they're going to create a bunch of explosive plays, which I don't really see a bunch of explosive plays coming. So. With that said, you better be converting. Like, you have to win takeaway battles, you have to win special teams, and then you have to convert third downs. I mean, it's those three things: win special teams, plus minus turnover, and first downs. You have to be as competitive as possible in those three.
Well, and turnovers led to all of your scores, right? All four.
Yeah, well, one directly, and
the first one,
yeah, the strip first sack, one was
Lonnie Johnson,
yeah,
another field goal, and I don't know if the last field goal had anything to do with the turnover.
Well, but no, there was an interception. Yeah, I think the last one was too.
Okay, so the turnovers were just huge in that football game, and you know, and I'll taking everything with a grain of salt because it is the preseason, but you know, it is kind of a big deal. And by the way, Coach actually answered a question. When asked how much are the starters going to play, he wants to see him go into the third quarter to actually make the transition from the first half into the second half, which they haven't done yet. Yes.
He didn't answer the
question. Coach actually answered a question. No, it actually happened.
Do we have sound?
I'm pretty sure he'll be able to get it. We'll get that later.
There's no sound. It didn't happen. No, nice try, John.
No, it's not on your sound sheet.
Good shot. Good job. Good effort. Good job. Good effort.
It was from the press conference yesterday that he had.
I'm sorry. Let me see. Nope, he didn't say it. Because it doesn't sound like something he would say, answering a question. Well, nothing has changed. We are still going to do the same thing we've been doing. Everything is the same. I'll let you know when Deshaun is out here. Okay. No, we didn't even ask about Deshaun.
Okay, so this Deshaun is the first question asked yesterday.
Ask about
what is your plan with the starters for this weekend? Well, we are going to play them more for sure. We want those guys to get a feel of what it was like to go into the second half of ball game. We haven't had that yet.
Okay.
Plan is to try to take them into the third quarter and see how we handle the adjustment from the first half to the second half.
So a real third quarter, because that's not always the case. So we got a real third quarter, like starters going to the third. It's not always the case.
Yeah, I mean,
some starters. I mean, maybe not Tyrod Taylor.
This is week three.
Well, would you play Tyrod Taylor in a third quarter?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would too, because we've seen enough Davis Mills. Tyrod Taylor's got to be ready to go.
Yeah. And here's the deal is now this is the third preseason game, historically the one where the starters play the most, but it's also the last preseason game, historically the game where the starters play the least. So it is going to be interesting to see how everybody does this. But since you have over a week to get ready for your next game, it's something that I think that they're all going to do.
I think they're eliminating the fourth preseason game, the meaningless one. I think a lot of starters are going to be playing this week. Some teams may do it differently, but I think they're going to treat this as the third preseason game. And I think they're just basically the scrub game.
Yeah.
Is it's affectionately known, is not going to, you're not really going to see that as much. They're not going to have that one going. That's going to be the second half of this game, or the fourth quarter of this game is what you're going to see. Because you're not rushing your starters in early with your preseason, but at some time they need some reps. And next year, or in the future, whenever it is, when they go 18 games and only two preseason games, I think you're going to see I think it'll be starters one game. I don't know how they do it.
Game two, probably.
Yeah.
Well, this is it's weird in that you play August 28th, Saturday, August 28th, and then you have 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
Until September 12th against Jacksonville. So, you know, normally you would play in Thursday and then have like 10 days until your next game. But this is almost two weeks off.
For some teams having some injuries and issues like that, that's good. I think, you know, the flip side of that is maybe you could have waited a week to start your camp and then maybe avoided some of the heat. Not really. I mean, yesterday was the hottest day of the year. Got up to 108, I think. So, although you have an indoor facility, so maybe actually moving it back a week is irrelevant in the city of Houston.
Yeah, you know, man. No.
September, we can do it.
No, this is fine. You got plenty of time to, you know, to get better, to make your decisions. You've seen guys.
Fantasy
you know
football
what you're
drafts
do.
Can see what's going on with rosters. Speaking of, I'll mention this a few times. Thursday, we've got a lot of help for you for your fantasy football leagues. At 9 o'clock, we've got Evan Silva from Establish the Run talking about quarterbacks. At 7:15, Field Yates from ESPN talking about running backs. Adam Rank from NFL.com talking about...
9:15.
I'm sorry, 9:15. At 9:30, Adam Rank talking about wide receivers. And then at 9:45, Dave Richard from CBS Sports is talking about tight ends and sleepers. So we've got all the position groups taken care of for you. Not defense, but all the position groups taken care of in every segment with four industry leaders.
That's going to be great.
Yeah, to get you ready for your fantasy if you're worried about that. The entire 9 o'clock hour is dedicated to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that actually there's a lot of fantasy drafts that are coming up this weekend, so we got you taken care of on Thursday. You won't want to miss that. Those are four very good people inside the industry. Evan Silva for years was with Roto World, and he's got his own thing, Establish a Run now. Dave Richard. I mean, these are guys who are some industry leaders in fantasy football. So we're really excited about that. Snacks had his, you know, what's happening is my kids are now, I'm getting nonstop peppered. They enter fantasy football leagues like on NFL.com. You can do it for free. And Snacks is yelling at me for every pick. You know, he's like, what about now? What about between these guys? Should I go at the, I don't have a quarter, I don't have a tight end yet. Should I draft a tight end? Like, no, pick best available. I tell you, your fourth pick, pick best available. If it's a tight end, good. If not, pick something else. And it is interesting to see how these goes. You know who the first four is. It's like a lock who the first four are, right?
The first four picks of
yeah.
Yeah. It's
in order. It's the McCaffrey. Same order every single time. It's like Wheel of Fortune where you get RSTNL. It's the same thing. It's McCaffrey 1. You know what, Aaron, who number 2 is?
It's McCaffrey. Is Dalvin Cook up there?
Dalvin Cook's 2.
2. Number 3 is going to be, let me think.
AK.
Who? Who is it?
Well, he could eat Lafayette, but he's still a couple hours away.
Alvin Kamara.
Yeah.
And then 4 is, I don't know.
The freight train.
Oh.
The big freight train.
Derrick Henry.
Yep. And then 5 is usually Zeke Elliott. So it's like
Zeke?
It's like those 5 are the top 5. The top 4, almost top 4 in every single time that there's a draft out there. I've helped all my kids with draft. They've always gone like that. All the average draft position stuff. There can be some variation between 2 and 3. Like you might, like I kind of like, I like Dalvin Cook more than Alvin Kamara personally. But I could see maybe someone not being all in on Zeke and going in a different direction.
I wouldn't take Zeke 5.
But that's the problem is my son had Ezekiel Elliott. He had the 5th pick, and he was like, well, what do I do? I don't like Zeke at 5. A little trickier then.
Yeah.
You know, Kelsey's going in the first round.
Yeah.
He gets a ton of touchdowns, a ton of catches, a ton of yards. A tight end goes in the first round.
Yeah. We had a draft just a few years ago, 5 or 6, 7 years ago, where Gronk went in the first round, and dude won the league. He went with Gronk in the first round.
Doesn't matter that they're tight ends. What's their production?
Yeah, you know? Right.
That's all that matters. That's why I don't like talking about Kyle Pitts with Atlanta. Throughout the draft, I made a point of just saying people, well, it's just strange. You have a tight end drafted that high. He's not a tight end.
Yeah.
He's a pass catcher. He's a weapon. He's a, you know, what's his production number? Quit telling me what position he plays. How does he produce? Tight ends to me means 600 or 700 yards receiving a lot of times. Maybe 7 or 8 touchdowns at most. Once you get into Antonio Gates territory, I don't care, you know, where you're double-digit touchdowns and 1,000 yards receiving. I don't care what your quote-unquote position is, not in fantasy football or not even in football. The number one wide receiver for Phillip Rivers for years was a tight end. Tony Gonzalez was critical for Kansas City for years, and then, you know, with Atlanta. Like, Travis Kelce's just a big wide receiver. Yeah. That's all he is in their offense. I don't care where he lines up, and Kyle Pitts is going to be the same thing with Atlanta. Now, I'm not saying he's going to get as much production as, like, a Travis Kelce, but I'm also not telling you he's not going to have a I'm not saying he's not going to have a big year, because there's a good chance he could have a big year, even as a rookie. The great thing is, with Underdog Fantasy, now, I played a four-teamer, basically, yesterday on Underdog Fantasy. Yeah, they have that available to you. I had over 99.5 yards on Trevor Lawrence passing. He went for like 116. I tied up the four different things on the pick 'em contest. The loser was Lance Lynn. I had over 5.5 strikeouts. He ended up with four. So I lost that. It was $8 and it was it was 10-1. So I had 8 to win 80. I ended up losing it. But you know, that's the great thing is you can play these pick 'em contests where you pick two or more and you have a chance to basically parlay them out, completely legal. Based on your skill level, you have daily fantasy. You have annual fantasy football where you draft your entire team right now, like in the small pup league or Big Ball Mania 2. Big Ball Mania 2 right now is at $3.5 million in prizes and $1 million for first place. You pick your team and you drafted 17 players in the league, I believe, and whoever has the best scores at those positions is who you start that week. So, and there's no sit start. There's no waiver wire. It's awesome, and it's just $25. Use promo code RADIO. Get a $25 bonus when you make your first deposit. That's promo code RADIO, underdogfantasy.com.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776. If you want to get in here, you're more than welcome to do that. Mentioned Field Yates, that he was on the Wheelhouse. Now, yesterday we had a conversation about Spencer Tillman and a little hyperbole that he brought to the table on Saturday night during the game, that Nick Caserio had one of the best offseason he's seen from a GM in a decade. A lot of people responded to that. A lot of people were, I mean, Brett Veach's and who else turned programs around? I guess there were some others in right there that they had really good off seasons. I guess drafting Pat Mahomes would have made that the greatest off season of anyone, right?
Well, it wasn't until the next year, like they had to wait a year.
But still,
I think people forget that he played one game the whole year.
No, but it was still the greatest off season of the last decade.
Well, that's a pretty big one. it's not as big as the Shaq Lawson's and Desmond King's and whatnot, but it's, and Davis Mills, but it's pretty big.
Yeah,
it's relatively big.
Well, Field Yates was on yesterday, and you know, we'll cut down on the hyperbole just a little bit, but Field Yates was on, and here's what he said. Caserio brings to the table.
Nick is, and I should note that nobody in football doesn't work hard, right? Like going to work for 12 hours for a football coach is like a light day. So you have to work incredibly hard to make it in this business. But Nick has a machine-like work ethic, and his versatility was something that even for those who worked with him always stood out, right? This is the same person that you could see evaluating a college prospect later on in the day, coordinating a veteran free agent workout, and then later on in the day after that, throwing passes on the practice field as sort of a stand-in assistant coach / quarterback on occasion.
So he knows him because he worked in the Patriots organization. So he knows Nick Caserio, and you know, he could bring a little insight. He was on the Wheelhouse yesterday with the guys. Another good get by those guys. And whether or not he says this, whether or not fans should have faith in Nick Caserio.
I know that it's going to take time in Houston, and I know that fans are understandably upset about things that took place over the past couple of years. And I'm not naive to the fact that they've got some frustrations about some of the current members of leadership that predate Nick Caserio and David Culley. I know that Jack Easterby is a lightning rod, to put it lightly, in Houston right now. But if Texans fans can muster it, I think that putting some faith and trust into the new leadership in Houston and understanding that's going to take some time will prove worthwhile.
It'll be interesting. I mean, everybody's got their thoughts about the draft, about Nick Caserio's draft. You didn't like Nick Caserio's
draft. I'm not a draft expert.
No, well,
that's what Nick said. That's what Nick said, and I would.
I'm
agree.
Not a draft expert.
I would agree up to this.
Well,
no, I wasn't a huge fan, but I texted my boy Jay Bird, John Harris, who we know. Said, man, I'd love to catch up with you about the team, just see what he's seeing, stuff like that. He said, yeah, don't have time now, but he goes, all five rookies are legit. They're really playing well in practice. He sees them, and you know, I trust his eyes, so he's happy with what he sees from Brevin Jordan and Davis Mills and. Who else? Roy Lopez, Garrett Wallow. I think those are the five. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know who they weren't happy with? They weren't happy with John Reed, the former fourth rounder from Bill O'Brien, was cut yesterday. That's not their player. But you know, when he is a Penn State guy, Bill O'Brien drafts him in the fourth round. When Bill O'Brien played him early and then stopped playing him altogether, that was a bad sign for John Reed. And I didn't even hear his name at any point this offseason. As a matter of fact, we never talk about John Reed either.
No, John Reed, Isaiah Coulter. Listen.
Yeah, listen, they're both gone.
Gone. If you're an O'Brien guy, you better be looking, you know, you better have your agent out there looking to see, you know, what's a possibility for me, because you're probably not long for this world. Bill O'Brien has now his track record of drafting and bringing in free agents and signing guys and re-signing guys and giving big contracts to. His record is astonishingly poor. I mean, splitting the atom here. It's just amazing. And you know what? Nick Caserio doesn't. It looks like he doesn't want to have anything to do with any of the players that Bill O'Brien had. If you're a mediocre player under Bill O'Brien, I'd rather go out and get a mediocre free agent and bring him in here.
I projected him. I'm looking at my draft profile. I project him to go in a sixth round. Is where, talking to teams and everything, I got a sixth rounder. And I said, competitive press nickel uses mirror quickness and controlled handwork to make release uncomfortable. Reed's body control and balance allow him to play a stickier brand of coverage underneath, but the coverage will fade as routes progress. He can be mismatched with big speed or big size and doesn't feature the physical profile of a capable run support defender. His passion and competitiveness and football IQ are fun to watch, but physical limitations could cap his ceiling. I talked to a director of scouting who said this when he came out. I'm worried about whether he can hold up to the run if he started at nickel. He's not a core special teams guy, so he can't afford to be weak in other areas since he's already a little small. That's pretty much who he ended up being. And if you can't play teams and you're a backup, you better be a really good backup if you can't play special teams. And I think ultimately you just saw that clearly Nick Caserio and this team didn't value him. It was another missed evaluation from Bill O'Brien and friends.
Yeah.
Is what it was. And you just can't, you know, I know it's a fourth rounder, it's not the end of it, but we've been saying about the Texans for two decades now. Wow, it's only a second, third, or fourth rounder. When the Texans are just a bust factory from rounds two through four, and they really have to become a lot better at some point. Like, at some point, hit, you know, at some point, get better value than the guys you drafted. Who are the ones who you're drafting who are playing well beyond their value? It's not Max Sharping. It hasn't been Lonnie Johnson up to this point. It hadn't been Titus Howard up to this point. Who are the draft picks at the Texans where you just go, man, the Houston Texans really got a lot of great value from there?
Justin Reed is the one that comes to mind.
Third rounder, you're getting way better value.
You're getting value of a start. You got a starting safety out of the third rounder.
I think you're getting.
You got a starting safety out of a third rounder.
It was a bad starter last year.
Yeah, well,
he's a bad starter. That's
he fell
not
off.
Value.
He's also had a lot of shoulder problems.
I would look at. Yeah, that's what I mean. That's not getting better value. Kahale Warren, was he good value in the third?
No. He didn't even get on the field.
Now Charles Omenihu. Okay. Now Charles Omenihu, fifth rounder. That's what I'm talking about. That's a really, really good one. Xavier Crawford, not so much. Cullen Gillespie, no, he's gone. Martinez Rankin in the third, not so much. I would argue Justin Reed is borderline. Jordan Akins, is he alive?
Yeah. No, he plays. He's still on the team.
Is he with Anoli or Keady?
No.
Who's he with?
He's not with either of them.
Kiki QT, I don't really think he's really outperformed that fourth round number. Duke Ejiofor, Jordan Thomas, Peter Columbia, none of these guys are with you anymore. Jermaine Kelly, 2017 Deshaun Watson draft. Zach Cunningham has been, you know, what you expected. Not Deontay Foreman, not Julianne Davenport, not Carlos Watkins, not Tristan Decoud, not Kyle Fuller. I mean, it's just, they just do nothing in the draft. It's unbelievable. Not Nick Martin, not Braxton Miller, Tyler Irvin, KJ Dillon. Now, DJ Reader did.
Yeah.
Fifth round.
Yep.
The ones who I'd say who fall into my category, honestly, as I look through this, are...
Well, the Deshaun Watson draft was Rick
since,
Smith.
Since 2015. Well, Bill O'Brien came aboard after the 13th season. So the 14th season, he came in. Not Xavier Suofilo, C.J. Fedorowicz, Lewis Nix, Tom Savage, Jeffrey Pagan, Alfred Blue. I mean, the closest you come is Alfred Blue. He at least was on the roster for a while.
Yeah, but again, though, that was Rick Smith's drafts.
Well,
yeah.
Bill O'Brien also had something to do with a lot of those drafts, too.
About it, but it was a Rick Smith draft. We know he's the one that drafted Deshaun Watson.
Well, yeah, I think at the beginning there was more input. Well, so what happened was I think Bill O'Brien came in wanting to control the 53, and I think he and Rick were working together. I think Bill O'Brien had a lot of control, and then somewhere he kind of lost it. And because I know the Deshaun draft was a Rick draft, Bill O'Brien was fussing and complaining behind the scenes that he was pouting. So he's like, I'm not going to do anything then if I don't have control of this roster. And then, you know,
and that worked out just perfect when he got control of the roster. Worked out.
But you look at
couldn't have worked out better.
It can be Rick Smith. It could be, okay, Rick Smith. You know, that draft, the first two at least they hit, the rest of them are bad. I mean, just loads of bad picks, 2 through 4. Loads of bad picks. Just at some point, you got to start drafting guys who play better than where you draft them.
Yep, yep. All right, 7:40, Aaron Reese, Rice is going to join us on the other side here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
He covers them for The Athletic. He's out there every single day.
Every day. So we will do that on the other side. I was just watching ESPN with Tom Brady on there throwing footballs, and the 33rd team wrote a little something up about him, and they're talking about quarterbacks in their second year in the system, how Aaron Rodgers flourished under Matt LaFleur in his second year, winning the MVP, and it'll be interesting to see if Baker Mayfield takes a step with Kevin Stefanski, who's really a great offensive mind, Kevin Stefanski. So we'll see if Baker Mayfield, that might be a guy that you look at this year because he's in Stefanski's system for another year. And then Tom Brady as well. Tom Brady's average depth of target was 9.8 yards last year. It's the highest of his career since 2003. A lot of dink and dunk at New England.
Well, so this is what happens when you have really good wide receivers. It helps. And then Bruce Arians is a vertical guy.
Well, and they say he just kept getting better and better. He peaked in week 16 to the NFC Championship game, indicating he was getting more comfortable in that offense. And so whether or not, I mean, if Brady's going to be even better, because let's face it, Brady wasn't great last year. We get Brady in this last game here. It'll be interesting to see how much they play Brady in this game to get him tuned up for the season.
Brady's that guy I'm not playing.
You don't think he's going to play at all?
I don't. Yeah, no, he might play, but I
think he'll play a few
series.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Does that tune you up?
No, but it'll be interesting to see it's going to be the first team offense for the Bucs. And we'll see with this first team defense how it looks.
I'm counting on the typical. We did it. Exhale, a little disappointing season. That's what I think is going to happen. Usually, it's the team that loses the Super Bowl has the disappointing season. But I think Tampa Bay may exhale a little bit after winning a Super Bowl. I could see them.
I can't. Not with everybody back. I mean, they got everybody back.
Yeah, they do.
You don't usually have everybody back.
Some of those guys are getting a lot older, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know that Gronk, can Gronk stay healthy for the year?
I think.
It's not the same. I mean, do you need him to, I guess?
I don't know.
This is New England.
They're pretty loaded.
Godwin and Mike, yeah. I mean, Scotty Miller, Antonio Brown, they got a lot.
All right, when we come back, we're going to have.
AB's still there, isn't he?
Yeah, Antonio Brown's still there.
Yeah, he was starting a fight where he punched that guy right in the mouth.
Right in the face. That's
what he
does. He
was swatting flies. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
All right, punching. Aaron Rice joins us on the other side from The Athletic to talk to your Texans here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All plumbing jobs, large or small, doesn't matter how big. You need a plumber. You want somebody that you can trust. You can trust Billy. You can trust Mary. You can trust the great people at Aqueduct Plumbing. We really like these guys. And here's the deal is they're going to come to your house absolutely free. To me, that's a key, that they're not just trying to gouge you for everything that they possibly can. The other plumbers are going to say, well, we got $69 just to show up. Well, okay. Well, then what if I don't even need you? I'm just going to throw $70 away? No. Aqueduct Plumbing is at your disposal. They are here for whatever it is that you need. You know when you have a crack, a busted pipe, or whatever the case is, water pressure, whatever the case is, Aqueduct Plumbing will be there for you.
Plumbing fixtures, hot water heaters, they do the tankless water heaters, drain cleaning, leak detection. I mean, they do it, new construction, remodels. They're there to do it all, and it's their crews. They're the ones who are out there. They're not subcontracting it to other people. Make sure you go to aqueductplumbingcompany.com. A-Q-U-E, ductplumbingcompany.com. Make sure for your plumbing needs, you take down the number and you get with our guys over at aqueductplumbing.com.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hi, 747 ESPN 97.5 or 92.5. Aaron Rice joining us from The Athletic, talking some Texans football. He covers them every day out there, and he's joining us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Aaron, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. All right, let's talk a little bit. All right, let's start. I want to start with Davis Mills because I've heard so many people say so many things. I'm not wowed by him. But I'm kind of pleasantly surprised with his poise and how he's played so far in these games. What about you?
Yeah, I think, he makes some impressive throws in the pocket. I mean, all those big gains in that last game were off of play action. Like you said, I think you're not going to be wowed by him. I think that would be pretty surprising, just considering, he was a third-round pick for a reason, right? I mean, the likely outcome is that he is not a long-term starter, just based on history. So he's working against the odds there. I think what you're encouraged by, or at least what I kind of find interesting, is he really does not the mistakes don't kind of compound on each other. He seems to kind of build off things from one week to the next. He very clearly is progressing. I think that's kind of all the Texans can hope for at this point. He started off camp throwing a ton of picks, through then kind of forced one ball in there in the preseason game. And then this time, I think he played a cleaner game. I think the Texans had more problems in terms of just dealing with pressure in this game than they did in the last one. But as far as he goes specifically, I think he is definitely kind of improving week to week.
Yeah, I think that, it's so early to make any kind of justification of this or that, or even make a final analysis. There's still a long way to go in his development. I mean, 11 starts in college. He has to learn the game of football still, like every rookie does. Only he doesn't have the in-game experience, so it's gonna take longer. I do think that, to me, just watching how they look from a comfort level on the field, I mean, Tyrod Taylor is clearly a guy who has a great comfort level and can manage an offense. So, but the question for John and I, Aaron, has been if you drafted him with your first pick in the third round, at some point we assume the Texans need to see what he can do, because there's going to be quarterback decisions to be made in the offseason next year. So how do they manage, getting the experience they need to see on tape from Davis Mills? Or do they simply say, look, we see enough in practice. We don't have to have him in game if Tyrod Taylor is going to be playing, average football.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on the reasoning. I mean, I think the same thing. You have to kind of get a feel for this guy, one way or another, before you potentially draft another quarterback first overall. I mean, I think obviously if he stinks in practice and you just from practice that he's not going to cut it, then he's not going to cut it. But I think if you at least feel like there's some promising signs there, you give the guy a chance. He probably would have to clear a really, really high bar for you. But if you
if you feel like he's at least good enough for kind of a year or two, and you are a year, I guess, and you know you don't like any of the quarterbacks, you're not enamored of any quarterbacks at the top of the draft, and you get a ton of value trading out of one of those spots and adding more picks and, you know, rebuilding all the parts of this roster. I don't know if that's necessarily the worst outcome either. So I think you got to give the guy a chance. But what's interesting to me is, like, when do you give him the chance, if Tyrod stays healthy the whole season? Because the end of the schedule is really brutal. I don't have all the games in front of me now, but I know, you know, they play Seattle and they play San Francisco, and then they play Indy, like, all the end of the year, and a couple others that are pretty tough. So I that'll be a tough stretch for him. What's interesting too is, like, you know, like you guys said, he has to just kind of learn on the job a little bit. But, you know, compared to some of these other quarterbacks who that would be the case for, you know, he's not kind of this guy who's going to just make stuff happen with his feet. He's athletic enough and can, you know, extend plays a little bit. But, like, he's got to win off his intelligence. And that's tough to do when you just don't have a ton of reps.
Aaron Rice with us here, covers the Texans for The Athletic on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. What is going to be the toughest cut for Culley? A linebacker? I mean, you're probably going to cut a player that might even get picked up. And listen, if you get cut by the Texans and you get picked up by another team, you did something. So is there a position that is going to actually, there are going to be good football players that they're going to have to kick to the curb?
I think linebacker is one. You know, I think they have some veteran guys there who have played in the league before. I mean, Neville Hewitt had like 100-plus tackles for the Jets last year. Not the tackles are, you know, the most perfect stat of a guy's effectiveness, but you know, he was out there a lot for the Jets last year. He was a competent player on a bad team, and I'm not sure he's going to make this team. So I mean, that's one guy, but I would probably point towards the defensive line more than anything else. I just, you know, you start adding up the numbers there, and it's hard to figure out kind of how you only get to 10 or whatever. I mean, and it's complicated by the fact that they're not going to cut Whitney Mercilus, or I'd be stunned if they cut Whitney Mercilus, you know, given his contract. In fact, they restructured it. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people talk about Shaq Lawson maybe getting cut too, just because he's playing deep in these fourth quarters, but similar deal. I mean, they just restructured his contract. So I don't think after they traded for him. So I don't think that they're prepared to just move on from him. Those two guys have to make it. That means like some guy who's played better in camp and seems deserving is probably not going to make it.
Aaron, I've had people from other teams just kind of mention and casually mention in passing, boy, it looks like Nick Caserio's out there doing a lot of hands-on coaching type stuff. He is a former coach with New England. He did do some of that. What's your take and what have you seen out there in terms of Nick Caserio with hands-on? You were covering the Texans when Rick was general manager, weren't you?
I actually, my first year was Brian Gain,
okay.
Personally, or, yeah, but yeah, I mean, like, so I guess I know more GM coaches than I don't, but he is out there a lot. You know, I mean, he is very hands on. I mean, you know, he tends to stand in like the end zone, kind of away from any drill, you know, with the drill coming towards him or whatever. And I feel like, especially with receivers, because, you know, he used to be a receivers coach, anytime like a guy, finishes a play or at the end of a drill, he seems to be counseling them one way or the other. He does seem to offer like as many kind of hands-on coaching points as David Culley, but he also is not moving around quite as much. I think Culley's like big thing is kind of like seeing over a little bit of everything at the moment. But yeah, it's certainly been interesting to watch him kind of be so hands-on, because, you know, obviously Bill O'Brien is a little bit different deal, and he was the head coach. Caserio doesn't have any sort of coach title in his title.
How do you see the role of Jack Easterby when you watch him out there in practice? When you saw him,
I saw him high fiving on the sideline.
I didn't see him high fiving, but what do you see on a daily basis? What does Jack Easterby's role look like, or what do you know it to be?
Yeah, I mean, I do believe he is not the one kind of making all the calls by any means. You know, I think he is, but he is very involved. I mean, he's at practice every day too. He's not giving guys a bunch of coaching points or anything, but he's out there interacting with guys every day. And he is, I see him kind of, sometimes Culley will give him directions to pass on another position group or coach or whatever, what they want them to do and stuff. So, I mean, he's highly involved. I mean, I think so much stuff falls under his purview, from like scheduling to the analytics department and the medical staff and stuff. So I think it's a lot of stuff that is not stuff we directly see, and even less so now that that the roster is not necessarily under his control. But you know, he is certainly involved. I mean, I hesitate to believe that he doesn't have any kind of say over the roster. Not like he makes final decisions, but I do think he has input. I mean, I think you see that with guys like David Johnson, right? I mean, he was the guy who brought David Johnson in, and you know, part of the appeal was that he was gonna be a good presence in the locker room, was a good teammate, and had a miserable season, and they bring him back on a restructured deal that does cut his cap hit, but also doubles his guaranteed money. And you look at it now, and this guy probably is, I think, only going to play on like obvious passing downs. I mean, he didn't even get a carry in the last game. He should play. So, I mean, to me, that's kind of one where it's like you signed all these other running backs for, you know, like $1 million. You know, you get them for cheap, and like you chose to bring this guy back and like $4 million or whatever when you could have just cut him to have to reduce the role. Like that. I mean,
it's just unbelievable how often this happens. I mean, Whitney Mercilus deal didn't make any sense at the time. Nick Martin deal seemed kind of crazy. The Whitney deal was really bad, but the David Johnson too, just unbelievable how bad the money management and the contract stuff was under Bill O'Brien. And it just irritates the piss out of me every time I think about how quickly they let the air out of the tires on the organ. And I'm not saying the roster was in great shape. It wasn't, but at the same time, there is a fork in the road where you can transition in the right direction or wrong direction. And they went into
they took the wrong turn.
One of
every
the worst
time.
Directions you yeah. could possibly
every
take.
Time it seemed like they took the wrong turn. Is there improvement defensively, more talent, or would you give more credit to Lovie, or would you, because Anthony Weaver really, really struggled as a defensive coordinator? Or what is it, how much is it, or is it a combination of more talent and Lovie?
I think it is a combination. Obviously, there's no superstar like J.J. Watt, but I think you have to look at what J.J. Watt's surroundings were, right, where it's like J.J. Watt could win a lot of times, and it wouldn't really matter because the cornerback depth was so shoddy that the ball was getting out super fast. I think it was like the seventh fastest time allowed on average in the NFL last season. Ball was getting out really fast. No one else, if the quarterback was able to kind of step up in the pocket or move around J.J. Watt, no one else was making him pay for it, right? So, like, I think that what you have now is there might not be a superstar guy, but there probably is better depth along the line for sure, and at least in terms of pass rushing. And and just better depth on the back end, barring injury right now. I think Desmond King, Briley Roby, and Terrence Mitchell is a better top three than Roby, Vernon Hargraves, and Eric Murray a lot of times. I mean, he was their slot corner a lot in his last year. So, I think it's a combination, and then also, like, I mean, a lot of Seattle holds them in the regular season. Like, obviously, a team is bad at forcing takeaways if they only force nine of them, and I do think it is a huge point of emphasis for Lovie. All the players say that, and the little things he does in practice make it happen. But, like, we also have to point out that turnovers are kind of random, and this team was on the very wrong end of randomness last year, and I think it's on the right end of it so far this year. So I think it's really a combination of all three of those things. Some randomness, improved talent, kind of in terms of just, like, competency from top to bottom a little more. That's kind of what it seems like, the whole approach and free agency. And then Lovie just making a little bit more of a point of emphasis and kind of his track record for just being able to produce turnovers wherever he went.
That is Aaron Rice, Athletic, right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We appreciate your insight, man. Get back out there. We thank you and hope we can have you again soon.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
All right, Aaron Rice right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. When we come back, Astros baseball, Bregman and Tucker updates for you. But first, Gulf Coast. What about Craig DeSerf? You haven't talked about him.
Yeah, here's an update for you. The $3,000 purchase allowance is still going on right now for the GMC Sierra pickup trucks. And they have on the GMC, I'll just speak about GMC for a second now. You have a company from a production standpoint that is making some really outstanding vehicles. You have the Yukon, you have the Sierra pickup truck, you have the Acadia, which is the crossover vehicle. They want to make sure that they give you enough options that no matter what type of vehicle you like, that you're going to love something from the GMC side. There's, of course, great financing opportunities right now that goes on with GM Financial that you can get right there in the dealership. But GMC wants to give you a safe product that is built with to the standards of performance and safety that you would expect. And that's what you get right here with the GMC Sierra pickup truck. Or, for example, what I've driven around with the wife was the Acadia and the Yukon. So make sure that you check them out online at LandZCars.com. GMC, We are professional grade.
This is Carlos Correa, All-Star and World Series champion, and big fan of Gulf Coast Chevrolet in Angleton. No one will treat you better. Chevy, find new roads.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.